Chapter 11. How Samuel Titmarsh reached the highest point of prosperity. If I had the pen of a George Robbins, I might describe the rookery properly. Suffice it, however, to say it is a very handsome country place, with handsome lawns sloping down to the river, handsome shrubberies and conservatories, fine stables, outhouses, kitchen gardens, and everything belonging to a first-rate russin herb, as the great auctioneer called it when he hammered it down some years after. I arrived on a Saturday at half an hour before dinner. A grave gentleman out of livery showed me to my room, a man in a chocolate coat and gold lace, with rose crest on the buttons, brought me a silver shaving pot of hot water on a silver tray, and a grand dinner was ready at 6, at which I had the honor of appearing in Von Stiltz's dress coat, and my new silk stockings and pumps. Bro took me by the hand as I came in, and presented me to his lady, a stout fair-haired woman, in light blue satin, then to his daughter, a tall, thin, dark-eyed girl, with beetle brows, looking very ill-natured, and about 18. Belinda, my love, said her papa, this young gentleman is one of my clerks, who was at our ball. Oh, indeed, says Belinda, tossing up her head. But not a common clerk, Miss Belinda, so, if you please, we will have none of your aristocratic airs with him. He is a nephew of the Countess of Drum, and I hope he will soon be very high in our establishment, and in the City of London. At the name of Countess, I had a dozen times rectified the error about our relationship. Miss Belinda made a low curtsy, and stared at me very hard, and said she would try, and make the rookery pleasant to any friend of Papa's. E have not much mon today, continued Miss Bro, and are only in petit comit. But I hope before you leave us, you will see some societ that will make your seizure agreeable. I saw at once that she was a fashionable girl, from her using the French language in this way. Isn't she a fine girl? Said Bro, whispering to me, and evidently as proud of her as a man could be. SN'T she a fine girl, eh, you dog? Do you see breeding like that in Somersetshire? No, sir, upon my word, answered I, rather slyly. For I was thinking all the while how Homebody was a thousand times more beautiful, simple, and ladylike. And what has my dearest love been doing all day? Said her papa. Oh, pa, I have pinched the harp a little to Captain Fizjig's flute. Didn't I, Captain Fizjig? Captain the Honorable Francis Fizjig said, yes, bro, your fair daughter pinched the harp, and touched the piano, and Egertoned the guitar, and ekerched a song or two, and we had the pleasure of a promenade alow, of a walk upon the water. La, Captain, cries Mrs. Bro, walk on the water? Hush, mama, you don't understand French, says Miss Belinda, with a sneer. It's a sad disadvantage, madam, says Fizjig, gravely, and I recommend you and Bro here, who are coming out in the great world, to have some lessons, or at least, get up a couple of dozen phrases, and introduce them into your conversation here and there. I suppose, sir, you speak it commonly at the office, Mr. What do you call it? And Mr. Fizjig put his glass into his eye and looked at me. We speak English, sir, says I, knowing it better than French. Everybody has not had your opportunities, Miss Bro, continued the gentleman. Everybody has not voyage like now sodders, hey? Mace K. Vowel is vows, my good sir, you must stick to your cursed ledgers and things. What's the French for ledger, Miss Belinda? How can you ask? Jean and Skaserine, I'm sure. You should learn, Miss Bro, said her father. He daughter of a British merchant need not be ashamed of the means by which her father gets his bread. I'm not ashamed, I'm not proud. Those who know John Bro, know that 10 years ago he was a poor clerk like my friend Titmarsh here, and is now worth half a million. Is there any man in the house better listened to than John Bro? Is there any duke in the land that can give a better dinner than John Bro? Or a larger fortune to his daughter than John Bro. Why, sir, the humble person now speaking to you could buy out many a German duke. But I'm not proud, no, no, not proud. There's my daughter, look at her when I die, she will be mistress of my fortune. But am I proud? No. Let him who can win her, marry her, that's what I say. Be it you, Mr. Fizjig, son of a peer of the realm, or you, Bill Tid. Be it a duke or a she-black, what do I care, hey? What do I care? Oh, oh, oh. Sighed the gent who went by the name of Bill Tid. A very pale young man, with a black ribbon round his neck instead of a handkerchief, and his collars turned down like Lord Byron. He was leaning against the mantelpiece, and with a pair of great green eyes ogling Miss Bro with all his might. Oh, John, my dear John, cried Mrs. Bro, seizing her husband's hand and kissing it, you are an angel, that you are. Isabella, don't flatter me. I'm a man, a plain downright citizen of London, without a particle of pride, except in you and my daughter here, my two bells, as I call them. This is the way that we live, Titmarsh my boy. Ours is a happy, humble, Christian home, and that's all. Isabella, leave go my hand. Mama, you mustn't do so before company, it's odious, shrieked Miss B. Semicolon and Mama quietly let the hand fall, and heaved from her ample bosom a great large sigh. I felt a liking for that simple woman, and a respect for Bro too. He couldn't be a bad man, whose wife loved him so. Dinner was soon announced, and I had the honor of leading in Miss B, who looked back rather angrily, I thought, at Captain Fizjig, because that gentleman had offered his arm to Mrs. Bro. He sat on the right of Mrs. Bro, and Miss flounced down on the seat next to him, leaving me and Mr. Tid to take our places at the opposite side of the table. At dinner there was turbot and soup first, and boiled turkey afterwards, of course. How is it that at all the great dinners they have this perpetual boiled turkey? It was real turtle soup. The first time I had ever tasted it. And I remarked how Mrs. B, who insisted on helping it, gave all the green lumps of fat to her husband, and put several slices of the breast of the bird under the body, until it came to his turn to be helped. I'm a plain man, says John, and eat a plain dinner. I hate your kickshaws, though I keep a French cook for those who are not of my way of thinking. I'm no egotist, look you, I've no prejudices. And Miss there has her bechamels and follows according to her taste. Captain, try the vol-au-vent. We had plenty of champagne and old Madeira with dinner, and great silver tankards of porter, which those might take who chose. Bro made especially a boast of drinking beer, and, when the ladies retired, said, Gentlemen, Tiggins will give you an unlimited supply of wine. There's no stinting here. And then laid himself down in his easy chair and fell asleep. He always does so, whispered Mr. Tid to me. Get some of that yellow sealed wine, Tiggins, says the captain. That other claret we had yesterday is loaded, and disagrees with me infernally. I must say I liked the yellow seal much better than Aunt Hagarty's Rosolio. I soon found out what Mr. Tid was, and what he was longing for. Isn't she a glorious creature? Says he to me. Who, sir? Says I, Miss Belinda, to be sure, cried Tid. Did mortal ever look upon eyes like hers, or view a more sylph-like figure? She might have a little more flesh, Mr. Tid, says the captain, and a little less eyebrow. They look vicious, those scowling eyebrows, in a girl. Cuendite's vows, Mr. Titmarsh, as Miss Bro would say? I think it remarkably good claret, sir, says I, egad, you're the right sort of fellow, says the captain. Alto si alto, eh? You respect our sleeping host yonder? That I do, sir, as the first man in the city of London, and my managing director. And so do I, says Tid, and this day fortnight, when I'm of age, I'll prove my confidence to. As how? Says I, why, sir, you must know that I come into a considerable property, sir, on the 14th of July, which my father made in business. Say at once he was a tailor, Tid. He was a tailor, sir, but what of that? I've had a university education, and have the feelings of a gentleman, as much aid, perhaps, and more, than some members of an effete aristocracy. Tid, don't be severe, says the captain, drinking a tenth glass. Well, Mr. Titmarsh, when of age I come into a considerable property, and Mr. Bro has been so good as to say he can get me 1,200 a year for my £20,000, and I have promised to invest them. In the West Didlisex, sir? Says I in our office? No, in another company, of which Mr. Bro is director, and quite as good a thing. Mr. Bro is a very old friend of my family, sir, and he has taken a great liking to me, and he says that with my talents I ought to get into Parliament, and then, after I have laid out my patrimony, I may look to matrimony, you see. Oh, you designing dog, said the captain. Then I used to lick you at school, whoever would have thought that I was thrashing a sucking statesman? Talk away, boys, said Bro, waking out of his sleep. I only sleep with half an eye, and hear you all. Yes, you shall get into Parliament, Tid my man, or my name's not Bro. You shall have 6% for your money, or never believe me. But as for my daughter, ask her, and not me. You, or the captain, or Titmarsh, may have her, if you can get her. All I ask in a son-in-law is, that he should be, as every one of you is, an honorable and high-minded man. Tid at this looked very knowing, and as our host sank off to sleep again, pointed archly at his eyebrows, and wagged his head at the captain. Bah! Says the captain. Say what I think, and you may tell Miss Bro if you like. And so presently this conversation ended, and we were summoned into coffee. After which the captain sang songs with Miss Bro. Tid looked at her and said nothing. I looked at Prince, and Mrs. Bro sat knitting stockings for the poor. The captain was sneering openly at Miss Bro and her affected ways and talk, but in spite of his bullying contemptuous way I thought she seemed to have a great regard for him, and to bear his scorn very meekly. At 12 Captain Fizjig went off to his barracks at Knightsbridge, and Tid and I to our rooms. Next day being Sunday, a great bell woke us at 8, and at 9 we all assembled in the breakfast room, where Mr. Bro read prayers, a chapter, and made an exhortation afterwards, to us and all the members of the household, except the French cook, Monsieur Nantong Pa, whom I could see, from my chair, walking about in the shrubberies in his white nightcap, smoking a cigar. Every morning on weekdays, punctually at 8, Mr. Bro went through the same ceremony, and had his family to prayers. But though this man was a hypocrite, as I found afterwards, I'm not going to laugh at the family prayers, or say he was a hypocrite, because he had them. There are many bad and good men who don't go through the ceremony at all, but I am sure the good men would be the better for it, and am not called upon to settle the question with respect to the bad ones, and therefore I have passed over a great deal of the religious part of Mr. Bro's behavior. Suffice it, that religion was always on his lips, that he went to church thrice every Sunday, when he had not a party, and if he did not talk religion with us when we were alone, had a great deal to say upon the subject upon occasions, as I found one day, when we had a Quaker and Dissenter party to dine, and when his talk was as grave as that of any minister present. Tid was not there that day, for nothing could make him forsake his Byron riband or refrain from wearing his collars turned down, so Tid was sent with the buggy to Astley's. "N.D. Harkey, Titmarsh, my boy," said he, "leave your diamond pin upstairs. Our friends today don't like such gewgaws, and though for my part I am no enemy to harmless ornaments, yet I would not shock the feelings of those who have sterner opinions. You will see that my wife and Miss Bro consult my wishes in this respect." And so they did, for they both came down to dinner in black gowns and tippets, whereas Miss B had commonly her dress half off her shoulders. The captain rode over several times to see us, and Miss Bro seemed always delighted to see him. One day I met him as I was walking out alone by the river, and we had a long talk together. Mr. Titmarsh, says he, from what little I have seen of you, you seem to be an honest, straight-minded young fellow, and I want some information that you can give. Tell me, in the first place, if you will, and upon my honor it shall go no farther about this insurance company of yours. You are in the city, and see how affairs are going on. Is your concern a stable one? Sir, said I, frankly then, and upon my honor too, I believe it is. It has been set up only 4 years, it is true, but Mr. Bro had a great name when it was established, and a vast connection. Every clerk in the office has, to be sure, in a manner, paid for his place, either by taking shares himself, or by his relations taking them. I got mine because my mother, who is very poor, devoted a small sum of money that came to us to the purchase of an annuity for herself and a provision for me. The matter was debated by the family and our attorneys, Messrs. Hodge and Smithers, who are very well known in our part of the country, and it was agreed on all hands that my mother could not do better with her money for all of us than invested in this way. Bro alone is worth $500,000 of money, and his name is a host in itself. Nay, more. I wrote the other day to an aunt of mine, who has a considerable sum. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.